Hello, this is James Stansel, and welcome to the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. Today, we're going to be talking with the author of Remixing Reggaeton, The Cultural Politics of Race in Puerto Rico. The author is Petra Rivera-Rideau, and she is an assistant professor of American Studies at Wellesley College. If you know anything about reggaeton music, you're going to know that it was really popular in the mid-2000s, and it's still popular in some places, and as you know, popular music in the United States kind of comes and goes. But Petra does a great job in kind of researching the popularity of reggaeton, the history of reggaeton, and how race and culture were a factor in the development of reggaeton in Puerto Rico and the United States and some other areas. I think you're going to like this interview. Petra is a great person to talk to. She's very fun and energetic. And she's also going to talk a little bit about some of her future projects that you can get involved with. So don't be afraid to contact her. But without further ado, I'll let you listen to this interview with the author of Remixing Reggaeton on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. Hello and welcome again to the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel, and I have the great pleasure today of being here with Wellesley College professor. She's an assistant professor of American Studies at Wellesley College, Petra Rivera-Rideau. And we're going to be talking with her today about her book, Remixing Reggaeton, The Cultural Politics of Race in Puerto Rico. And this book is published by Duke University Press. Petra, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I saw your book listed and I was like, man, this is something good. You know, it's music, it's history, you know, it's culture. And I definitely wanted to have you on the African American Studies channel to talk with my audience. So thank you also for taking some time with us today from your busy schedule as a big time academic and scholar up there in Wellesley.
Thanks.
And again, the book is Remixing Reggaeton. And before we really get into, you know, some of the details of the book, Petra, you know, my audience often likes to know a little bit about the authors and scholars who write these books. So maybe, you know, go into your background a little bit, you know, where you went to school, you know, interest in this topic. And if you don't mind, maybe you can also talk with us a little bit about the length of time it took for you to complete this project and what type of research you did.
Yeah. Well, I've always been really interested in ideas around race and racialization. Mm-hmm. And I grew up until I was about 8 or 9 in Lorain, Ohio, which is a steel mill town, which sure. with a substantial Puerto Rican population. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a Puerto Rican neighborhood in Lorain. And then I moved to a suburb of New Haven, Connecticut, that was a predominantly white suburb. And those experiences growing up taught me very different ideas about race and how Puerto Ricans are understood racially. And then when I went to college, I went to Harvard, mm-hmm. and I was very interested, I think like a lot of students, in exploring histories and texts that were relevant to my experience as a sure. Puerto Rican person. And at that time, Harvard did not have Latino studies. It had a certificate in Latin American studies, which is sort of the equivalent of a minor. Mm-hmm. But it had African American studies. And my father, when I started at Harvard, my father told me that I had to take Introduction to African American Studies, which was taught by Cornel West.
Wow.
And it was an incredible class. It had a huge book list, you know, and I amassed this amazing library of all kinds of really important African American writers like Carter G. Woodson and Toni Morrison, Richard Wright, Zora Neale Hurston, I mean, the classics. And that really got me interested in African American studies and interdisciplinary approaches to thinking about race.
Right.
So I wound up majoring in African American studies at Harvard. And there they were really encouraging and wanted me, you know, they were really encouraging in getting me to think about race in Latin America.
Okay.
I studied in Cuba. I was able to do projects about the relationships between African Americans and Puerto Ricans in the Northeast,
mm-hmm.
Long history of collaboration, cultural, political. between African American and Puerto Rican communities. And so that really whet my appetite for this kind of research. And then I went to graduate school at UC Berkeley in African diaspora studies. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting because, of course, it's in California where there's not a substantial Puerto Rican population. But that program at Cal had several important Caribbeanists. So I worked with Percy Hinson in Caribbean studies, mm-hmm. And Jocelyn Gilbeau, who's an ethnomusicologist of the Caribbean. And also that department had a strong cultural studies and interdisciplinary focus. Mm-hmm. And so I also worked with Lee Rayford, who does work on African-American visual culture, and does a lot of work on cultural studies. So they advised my dissertation, which became this book. But the other thing that was interesting and unexpected about Berkeley was at the time there was a group of us graduate students who were very interested in race in Latin America. And we started a group called the Afro-Latino Working Group. And we were a small cohort of people, but we wound up having these pretty big conferences for graduate students from around the country and big faculty members. And Berkeley became a place that I think people started to think about Afro-Latino studies at Berkeley, which was interesting because there weren't that many faculty doing that, but there were a lot of graduate students. And so that was also very formative for me because I was part of a cohort of people thinking about race and identity in Latin America. And so they were very helpful with my dissertation. And then the other group of people that really mentored this project, there's so many people, but I just also really have to talk about Juan Flores and Miriam Jimenez Roman. Mm-hmm. So Juan was really a pioneer in Latino studies and theorizing the Puerto Rican experience in the United States, thinking about the relationships between Puerto Ricans and African Americans and blackness in the Puerto Rican community. And his work was very influential for me. And his partner, Miriam Jimenez Roman, also is an expert in Afro-Latino studies. Mm-hmm. And so through my work with the Afro-Latino Working Group at Cal, I developed relationships with them, and they really have given me a lot of professional opportunities and really supported my work. So I like to say that because when I went to California, I think some people were like, whoa, why are you studying the Caribbean in California? You know, there's no Caribbean people in California. Hmm. But it really wound up being a very dynamic and fruitful place for me to do this work. And then in terms of the dissertation itself and then subsequently the book, I went to Puerto Rico. I talked to a lot of people over there. I spent a lot of time trying to get in touch with reggaeton artists. Mm-hmm. And I was sometimes successful, but mostly not successful. But I did talk to a lot of people in Puerto Rico about their ideas about race and reggaeton. And I also did a lot of work in New York City, particularly at Hunter College, has Centro de Estudios Puertorriqueños, which has the Center for Puerto Rican Studies has this large archive of Puerto Rican materials, and that was very useful for me. So I kind of went back and forth between those two places, which is to get the material for the work. And then I did my dissertation, and I bounced around to a few different institutions. And while I was doing that, I was fortunate enough to get a lot of support to produce the book manuscript, and here we are.
And here we are indeed. Well, that's a great story, and really interesting to me to hear you kind of describe your journey from Ohio mm-hmm. to California, and back now to Puerto Rico, and back to the Northeast. I mean, that's awesome. And I'm here with the author of Remixing Reggaeton: The Cultural Politics of Race in Puerto Rico, Professor Petra Rivera Rideau. And she is a professor of American Studies and assistant professor of American Studies at Wellesley College. And we're on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. And, I'm glad you shared, the process that you went through to, conduct your research and, your personal motivation for it. Because, again, a lot of people, they don't understand that, sometimes when we do research and we do these projects, they have some personal meaning for us. And it's also not really easy to get people to want to talk about, things. People may be kind of anti-academic or untrusting, particularly when you're talking about, different types of music and, and cultural aspects. people don't really want to share all the time because they don't trust how you're going to represent them.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. and even though you are Puerto Rican, you know, but you came from the mainland. And so they may have you, a little differently there. So maybe let's get into, your book a little bit. And I guess the first thing we should do, Petra, is maybe explain to some of our listeners what reggaeton is, right?
Yeah.
For those who may not be familiar. I'm a fan of reggaeton, so, I like it. But some may not be as familiar. And then, maybe you can get into some of the important points or areas that you want to highlight about your book.
Okay, great. Yeah. So reggaeton is a form of popular music. It's often described as a kind of hybrid between rap and dancehall reggae.
Right.
And it is a music that we in the United States often think about. Probably the first big hit people are familiar with is Gasolina by Daddy Yankee,
right,
which came out in 2004 and was profoundly successful not only in Spanish language music markets, but also on MTV, on hip hop stations. Many people are familiar with that song.
Mm-hmm.
But reggaeton actually has a much longer history and it's quite a complex one. And one of the things I wanted to do in the book was to highlight that history.
Mm-hmm.
So reggaeton circulated. Well, the first thing I should say is, I wrote my book about reggaeton in Puerto Rico for a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One is that many of the artists in the mid-2000s that we thought of as reggaeton singers were from Puerto Rico or of Puerto Rican descent.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, a lot of the very big stars in reggaeton are actually Colombian, but that wasn't the case when I wrote my book. But there actually is also quite a bit of beef between different groups about who created reggaeton.
Mm.
So Panamanians say they created it, Puerto Ricans say they created it. And of course, there's all these other musical influences from Dominicans, from Jamaicans, from African Americans,
sure,
from all over. But I focused on Puerto Rico, like I said, because the artists, many of the kind of big time artists were from there. And also I was really interested in thinking about race relations in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And I found reggaeton to be a space where people were interested in talking about racial and class dynamics.
Sure.
So you were just talking about how difficult it can be to talk to people. Puerto Rico has historically been a place where people didn't talk about race,
mm-hmm,
and race very much. It is a territory of the United States, but its race relations are more comparable, I think, to many places in Latin America, Brazil or Colombia or other Spanish Caribbean places like Cuba or,
mm-hmm,
Dominican Republic. In that Puerto Rico often defines itself as a society that's defined by racial harmony and race mixture.
Mm-hmm.
So, that it's a place where everybody is racially mixed and there's no racial problem.
Okay.
And so when I went to Puerto Rico to talk to people about race, nobody wanted to talk to me about race. They were like, that's not a problem here. Or, you grew up in the United States where they have all kinds of racism, and so you're bringing that to us, and, this doesn't make sense. But I found when I talked to people about reggaeton, they would come up, there would be a lot of really interesting ways that people were talking about race without talking about race explicitly.
Right.
So they would say things about reggaeton artists or fans. They would comment on fashion, hairstyles, the communities where reggaeton singers came from, which are often, working class, urban communities,
mm-hmm,
and things like that. So I found it to be a really fruitful way to talk about race in Puerto Rico. So that's the other reason the book is from there. But
mm-hmm,
the music itself, there's a lot of different movements of people across the Caribbean basin and between the Caribbean and the United States,
mm-hmm,
that inform the development of reggaeton. So like West Indians going into Panama, West Indians, Puerto Ricans and Dominicans moving into New York, and
mm-hmm,
then Puerto Ricans moving back and forth between the island and New York. So I detail some of those movements in the book. And so I mentioned that because I think that defining reggaeton can be difficult because it depends on where people think it started and things like that. The other place for people who are unfamiliar with reggaeton and they don't know about Daddy Yankee is, reggaeton. When I wrote my book, reggaeton, there was what people called the reggaeton bubble. So Daddy Yankee came out with Gasolina in 2004, and then there were a lot of reggaeton acts signed to major record labels. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really popular. And then people said the reggaeton bubble burst or was bursting around 2007. So there was an idea that it was saturating the music market and people were getting bored with it. Mm-hmm. And so people kept telling me, oh, you have to hurry up and finish your book because nobody's going to listen to this music anymore. And I haven't found that to be true. And I think one place that reggaeton is really popular is in Zumba classes. So it's actually one of the four core moves of Zumba. And so many listeners who are Zumba enthusiasts may have heard various Zumba reggaeton songs.
That's interesting.
And so I think people are more familiar with reggaeton than they think. Even when I think about like a current pop song, you know, something like Justin Bieber's Sorry or Sia's mm-hmm. Cheap Thrills, they have a reggaeton type beat in
elements,
the back. So
right.
People are more familiar with it than they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's generally considered a combination of rap and dancehall aesthetics, generally sung in Spanish, sometimes with English lyrics peppered in, and it will often incorporate different Latin music samples. So there's often a lot of guitar sounds that come from Dominican bachata,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe some stuff from salsa or vallenato mm-hmm. or merengue. So different Latin music genres, generally from the Caribbean mm-hmm. based, right? So I think that people can find it. Once you start paying attention to reggaeton, I feel like you can find it everywhere.
Right.
You know?
It's become, I mean, the story of reggaeton, that's another thing that fascinated me about your book, is that the story of reggaeton reminds me so much of hip-hop and rap, you know, the debate about where it came from, you know, who started it. And then the slow cultural appropriation to where, you know, hip-hop is not even anywhere close to where it was. It doesn't even kind of sound the same because it's become incorporated so much into popular music. You know, so it's interesting you said it about, you know, the Zumba, because the people who you often see in Zumba classes don't look like anyone that you see, you know, in Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're usually not going to reggaeton clubs in San Juan.
Right.
Yeah.
True. Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's just interesting, you know, how that, you know, that works. Or, you know, even you can look at blues music and gospel and how it eventually, and R&B, and how you eventually got rock and roll, you know, that,
right.
you know, that developed. And then, you know, it comes an, you know, orphan, you know, orphan musical style of culture. It's like, oh, where did that come from? You know, what are you talking about? You know, they don't recognize the connections. And it takes books like yours and, you know, and others for people to kind of trace the history that sometimes gets forgotten.
Right.
You know, so it's really interesting to me, you know, in that regard. And I love reggaeton music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, maybe 10 years or so ago when it was really popular, you know, I was like, wow, this is awesome. You know, these artists from the, you know, from the islands are, you know, really becoming big. And, you know, when I was an undergraduate, it was like reggae. You know, you had like Shabba Ranks and, you know, and all these guys coming out of Jamaica.
Yeah.
It was a similar kind of thing. And it just goes in cycles. And I'm here with the author of Remixing Reggaeton. I know some of you probably are expecting to hear
That is a really good vocalization of the reggaeton beat.
Hey, I told you I had some familiarity with it there.
Yeah.
We should like maybe, I should talk with my New Books Network producers and have that running in the background. You know, as we go through the interview. But I'm here with the author of the book, Remixing. We're just having some fun. Remixing Reggaeton, The Cultural Politics of Race in Puerto Rico. And the author is Petra Rivera Rideau. And the book is published by our friends at Duke University Press. Not my personal friends since I'm a North Carolina Tar Heel, but our friends at New Books Network. And Petra is a professor at Wellesley College. She's an assistant professor of American Studies up there. So if you're in that Connecticut area, you can come by and play some reggaeton music. She may come outside with her notepad and take some notes for her next book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. And so, you know, it's really interesting. You talked about that Colombian and some of those outside, I don't want to say outside, but alternate, maybe that's a better way, alternate locations for reggaeton. You know, that may be, I don't know if you thought about it, remixing reggaeton too, T-O-O.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you can do
that. Reggaeton is an incredibly popular genre of music internationally.
Right.
You know, I mean, reggaeton artists are performing in Europe. They're having hits in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They are in Asia. I mean, they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. And reggaeton scenes are pretty different in different places.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, a lot of the popular artists, J Balvin, Maluma, are coming out of Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
One of the really popular artists currently is a Puerto Rican, Dominican person named Nicky Jam, who's actually originally from the Boston, Massachusetts area, and then moves to Puerto Rico. And he had a reggaeton career in Puerto Rico, then kind of went away for a little while, moved to Medellin, Colombia, and then came back, and is incredibly popular. So he's also popularizing this kind of Colombian sound. But there's also scenes, you know, in the Dominican Republic has a dembow scene. In Cuba, there's a reggaeton scene. So there are lots of places, and they are all sort of unique. And there's quite a lot of work to be done to document these scenes and think about their impact in their particular locations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's not that many of us who are studying reggaeton.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of room for people who want to go and study these things to do it. There's a lot of potential projects out there. To do so.
Well, we want you to do some of them though, Petra, so you
yeah.
can come back
yeah.
and be back on the African American Studies channel, the New Books Network. Don't give away all the opportunities, okay?
Well, I feel like there's so many, I can't do them all myself. So we need to recruit some people.
Some future scholars, absolutely.
Right.
You know, so if you're in Nueva York right now, or you know, you're a Boricua in Puerto Rico, or you know, some of these other countries, and you don't necessarily have to be a PhD student. I mean, if you have a reggaeton artist in your family or you really like the music, maybe get out there, like Petra was saying, and look at doing some research on it, you know. Interview
yeah.
some artists, you know, go to some shows, or, you know, you can do just like Petra, even if it's not reggaeton. It could be some other type of music. It could be merengue or, you know, some other type of island music or hip-hop. There's plenty of books out there on hip-hop. Pursue
right.
your passions, young folk, and you know, you can grow up and become an outstanding Harvard educated scholar like Petra here, right?
Yeah, and I just say, like, that's the other reason I got into this project, you know, is that I also like reggaeton, and so I'm a big fan of studying what you like.
Absolutely.
And what you listen to and what's part of your reality, and so I think that's also important to point out. I think a lot of people have an impression that many scholars pick topics because they seem appropriate to the academy.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, reggaeton, you know, it has, as I talk about in the book, you know, it has a reputation for being seedy, you know, dirty, associated with drugs, associated with hypersexuality. It's not the kind of music that actually one would expect to find, I think, in the academy in a lot of ways. Which was the other reason why I was interested in writing. Because I was like, why not? You know, why not talk about these things? Especially since it's so incredibly popular.
Right. So. I mean, all topics, you know, or most every topic is worthy of study, right?
Right.
And by the academy, you know, Petra means colleges and universities, places where you find scholars like herself, you know. Academy
yeah.
meaning the academic world.
And, exactly.
You know, and reggaeton, just like hip hop or, you know, anything that you like or other people like is certainly worthy of being studied academically, just like, any, you know, anything else, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with Petra about her book, Remixing Reggaeton, The Cultural Politics of Race in Puerto Rico, published by Duke University Press. And again, I'm here with Petra Rivera Rideau. And no, Rideau is not a Spanish name.
No, it's not. It's French, yeah.
Yeah, that's French. That's a story for another day. But, you know, she she has other cultural connections as well. Not just
yeah.
American and Puerto Rican, but also some Creoles, you know, Haitian.
Louisiana Creole.
Yeah, Louisiana Creole, absolutely. So Petra is definitely a world scholar, we certainly should say. But, yeah, I would love to see Petra remixing reggaeton 2 from you, remixing
yeah.
reggaeton 3, the Colombian version, right?
Right.
And so, you know, you mentioned going to Puerto Rico and talking to folk. So mostly use, I guess, you know, interviews Was that your main way of, gathering some of your information, or were there other research techniques that you use?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think of this book as a very interdisciplinary approach to the study of reggaeton, but also really rooted in kind of cultural studies work. And so I did talk to people. I talked to people, young people who loved reggaeton or hated reggaeton. I talked to all of them. Because one of the things I learned is that reggaeton elicited very extreme reactions. I was there. It was the, sort of the height of its popularity, and people either thought it was just the best or thought it was just the worst. And so people were really wanting to talk about their opinions. I also looked at a lot of Puerto Rican newspapers. Mm-hmm. I looked at, articles. So the first two chapters of the book talk about two different censorship campaigns that reggaeton endured. Mm-hmm. One mid-1990s, that was at the same time as this larger anti-crime initiative that really targeted working class urban communities in Puerto Rico that were racialized as Black or non-white. And then in a second one in 2002, that was more like music video. It was about music videos and women dancing in music videos. And so to get information for those chapters, I looked at newspapers. I was really interested in how the newspapers in Puerto Rico were presenting these censorship campaigns. Okay. And there were also, these were big news stories, particularly the one in 2002 was a really big news story. And so there were lots of things like letters to the editor or columns, opinion pieces about it. So those were really useful for me as well. And then I also look at the artists themselves. So I think about, their songs. I really like to talk about music video. I think music video is a really rich site for analysis. Mm-hmm. So I'm also interested in that and like the visual culture, things like album packaging. So what's on the cover of an album. So I looked at all of those kinds of things. And I also got some information in the last chapter of that book. I talk about what happened to reggaeton when Gasolina came out and when it entered the U.S. market. As backed by like major record companies. Okay. So for those, I looked at U.S. newspapers, big ones like the New York Times, as well as a lot of reggaeton artists were also covered in lots of hip hop publications like Vibe magazine. So I looked at all those kinds of materials for the text. So I really think about it as an interdisciplinary thing, but I think the interviews were really important for me because I certainly had my own opinions about reggaeton, but I wanted to hear what other people thought. And also it allowed me to get a better understanding of how people were thinking about race in Puerto Rico at that time. So those were really, really fruitful for me as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And, I talk sometime with, authors on my podcast about, hey, every cell phone now has a recording device on it, a microphone or something. So everyone can, get out there and do some interviews with their family members, their older relatives, people in their community. Everyone can do some of those kind of things. You don't have to have any kind of fancy recording equipment, and you never know where those things will go. And, you may be the person that is recording history for your family, that older person. Abuelo y abuela, that maybe, others, grandfather, grandmother, that maybe others are not, talking to. And you never know the importance of those things. And so, don't underestimate interview techniques, as research. And it could lead you to write a book like Remixing Reggaeton one day. You never know, right? And Petra, you mentioned, like packaging and album covers and things like that. I thought the cover for your book was really cool. So let's talk about that for a minute. If you can't see it, obviously this is a podcast. You can go to our New Books Network page, the African American Studies Channel page, and you'll see a picture of the book up there. There'll be a short bio and some information about the book. You can click right through to purchase the book from Amazon, or you can click to Petra's page at her university, or some of her personal stuff. You want to get in contact with her or find out more about her, it's all right there. And who is this artist on the cover, and why did you choose it, or the publisher sometimes chooses it, right?
So this is sort of a funny story. So the artist on the cover is someone named Tego Calderon, and I have a chapter about him in the book. He's a really important artist. You know, we think about Daddy Yankee in the United States as the person who kind of opened the doors for reggaeton in the U.S., and I think he is in many ways. But in Puerto Rico, the person who really kind of elevated reggaeton was Tego Calderon. And like I mentioned, you know, reggaeton had a long history in Puerto Rico. You know, in the 80s, you had people like Vico C, who a lot of reggaeton artists describe as kind of like the godfather of the genre, you know, major influence for them. He was someone who was listening to rap music from the United States and rapping in Puerto Rico. And if you listen to some of Vico C's old work, you hear, you know, it sounds like rap from the late 1980s, right? But then reggaeton artists were also borrowing from dancehall samples. And like you mentioned, Shabba Ranks a while ago, but, you know, his song Dembo, many people say, is the kind of basis for that beat, right, that reggaeton artists were listening to. Combining, but they were combining all kinds of things, and they were having parties, and they were very similar to hip hop, you know, having parties and also recording cassette tapes and selling them. And at that time, it was called underground music because it was literally in the underground economy. And as I mentioned, you know, there was a censorship campaign in the mid 1990s in which the Puerto Rican government was concerned that reggaeton, or underground as it was called, was promoting things like drug use and crime through its lyrics. And so that's when you start seeing a lot of anxiety about what reggaeton is going to introduce to the Puerto Rican population. Mm-hmm. And particularly, I think, the Puerto Rican middle class population, right? Because it had been circulating informally for a long time and nobody really was paying a lot of attention to it. And then it started to be sold in places like malls, and then that campaign started. And so that censorship campaign, they went and they confiscated these recordings from record stores and charged them with peddling obscenities, and then it got thrown out on the grounds of the First Amendment of the Constitution, because as a territory of the United States, Puerto Rico is governed by the U.S. Constitution. So, but one of the things that's interesting about that, and then the subsequent censorship campaign in 2002, which, as I said, was about music videos. So that one, there was a lot of concern about representations of women in music videos. And it is absolutely the case that reggaeton, is a very hyper-masculine genre. It can often promote very problematic representations of women. And there were some, very racy music videos happening. But this campaign was spearheaded by a woman, a Puerto Rican senator from the Puerto Rican Senate, Elda Gonzalez, who was in charge of a committee that started this thing called the Anti-Pornography Campaign, and they were trying to get oust pornography from the media, but they targeted reggaeton music videos. And the thrust of that campaign was to think about how to clean up these videos and make them better for a mainstream audience on the island.
Okay.
And so what was ironic about both of those censorship campaigns is they wound up, I think, giving quite a bit of publicity to this music, even though that wasn't their intention. So because they were covered in the newspapers and things like that, they started getting, some of these artists started getting publicity that they hadn't had before as underground artists.
Right.
So shortly after the other thing those censorship campaigns did was, again, promote this kind of stereotype of reggaeton as hypersexual, as violent, as attached to drugs, and all these kind of bad things. And shortly after the anti-pornography campaign ended, Tego Calderon came out with an album, and it was really celebrated by Puerto Ricans across class lines.
Mm-hmm.
Really an interesting thing, you know, Calderon is pretty unique, I think, as a reggaeton artist, in that he really incorporates a lot of Puerto Rican musical traditions, particularly Afro-Puerto Rican folkloric traditions like bomba and plena, also old school salsa from the 1970s, into his music. And that's not very common in a lot of reggaeton artists. He also has a lot of political lyrics about race and racism. Mm-hmm. And so these albums, you know, he has a song that I talk about in the book called Loisa, which is a song that talks about racism in Puerto Rico in mm-hmm. very explicit ways. So one of the things that's very interesting about Tego is that even Velda Gonzalez, the person who spearheaded this 2002 censorship campaign, mm-hmm. endorsed his album.
Wow.
As like this really great album, right? And so it really opened the doors for a lot of reggaeton singers. And it's very ironic to me because he's criticizing many of the same people that are embracing him, right? You know, even though he's criticizing their racial politics, right? So I find that to be really interesting. And he is on the cover. And I also love the cover. They had a great designer do the cover.
Yeah, it's great.
He's really important to the history of reggaeton. And he's really also just a generally very interesting artist. So both musically and lyrically. And he also, I would say about Tego, like he's really a student of Puerto Rican popular music mm-hmm. and Puerto Rican music in particular, and also a student of hip hop, right? And you can really tell that when you listen to his work. And he's still around and he's still making some really good records. So I encourage people to check him out.
Tego Calderon.
T-E-G-O,
right?
Yes, T-E-G-O is his first name. Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but he starred in a few of those Fast and Furious movies, did he not?
He did, yes. He was in Fast and Furious. I haven't seen those, but yeah. And also Don Omar, who's another
yes.
very popular reggaeton singer. Both of them have been in Fast and Furious film.
Right,
yeah.
Because I was first introduced to him through that. I mean, he had a kind of a bit of a comedic role. Those movies, and I think that's part of the reason why. And now that you explain that to me, it makes more sense now that he didn't appear in any more, because I think he felt like he was kind of being exploited, made kind of maybe a caricature of a Caribbean person or a Spanish speaking person. But he was in a couple of them with Don Omar. I think they were like a team.
Right. I've read about these movies, but I haven't seen them.
Well, again, when you do your biography of Tego, Petra, make sure that you come back to see me on the New Books Network. I'm giving you all these projects to do, Petra. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I'm noting them down. Yeah.
But yes, this is a great cover. So you did get to choose, because some authors tell me they don't get to choose their cover images, but you did get to choose this one.
Well, no, they gave me some different choices.
Okay.
I was not a very helpful author. You know, they have you explaining what kind of cover you want, and I didn't have any ideas. And I actually didn't think I wanted to have an artist on the cover. But they gave me some different choices, and I just really liked that one. I think it's really beautiful. So, everybody was enthusiastic about it. And then my best friend who works in marketing, I remember showing her the different covers. And she was like, you should pick that one because everybody knows who Tego is. And so, yeah, it worked out. But I love the cover. I think it's great.
I mean, it's great. And it definitely attracts people to the
book.
And that's very important when you're talking about general audiences and books outside of the academy. You know, you want to have something attractive that draws people in. So I think it's great. And how about the title, Remixing Reggaeton? Did they come up with that title or was that yours?
That's another good story. So I had a title, a really like not very interesting title. My editor and the marketing group at Duke also sort of, we talked about changing the title and we came up with that one. So yeah. Yeah, I can't take full credit for the title, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, that's what they do. I mean, you know, we do the scholarship and they do the marketing and all those kind of things.
We did come out the chapter titles, though. So.
Hey, there you go. But, you know, I like to, you know, talk about some of these kind of things on the podcast as well, so people can understand that, you know, those things are important. And it's not always the author that comes up with the book titles. The images.
There's a lot of people involved in making a book besides the author.
Absolutely. And the author whom we are here with today is Petra Rivera Rideau. She is an assistant professor of American Studies at Wellesley College. And the book we're talking about, published by Duke University Press, is Remixing Reggaeton. And I'll give you another little rendition of my reggaeton beat, Pedro. I was waiting for you to hit some lyrics for me now. Next time I do that, you have to.
That's not my forte, yeah.
You're a scholar, not an artist.
I'm a fan. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And you know, you're a fan, but you don't underestimate yourself. You're also a great scholar, and
you did a
wonderful job introducing, and you know, maybe not necessarily introducing, but providing more information about reggaeton, either introducing or providing more information about reggaeton for people like myself who are fans of the music, or for people who are just interested in Puerto Rican history, musical history, you know, the African diaspora, you know, et cetera, and the connections between reggaeton and reggae and hip hop and cumbia and merengue and, you know, so on and so forth, all of your different salsa you mentioned, all your different types of Caribbean and island music. And, you know, many don't realize that the African connection to these types of music is very strong. You know, they don't understand until they start really kind of researching. You mentioned with Tigo there that he understands that, you know, even with the beats and the drums and, you know, the dancing, and there's strong connections. Latin America, Central America, even into South America with Brazilian and, you know, and some of your other Spanish-speaking and Portuguese-speaking countries down there.
Yeah, and that was really important to me. I mean, one of my other kind of goals of this book, I wanted to talk about the history of reggaeton and race relations in Puerto Rico, but I also really wanted to insert Puerto Rico into the conversation about the African diaspora. And I think that this is profoundly important. I mean, Puerto Rico has this historical reputation of what they call the whitest of the Antilles. And I think that both at various moments in history, you know, the Puerto Rican elite and also the American government, U.S. American government, has been invested in presenting Puerto Rico as white or very racially mixed and non-black. But as you mentioned, Puerto Rican culture, Puerto Rican history is very indebted to many black people and African-based cultural practices. And you know, reggaeton to me, it's marketed as Latin music, and there's, I think, often an assumption that Latin music is distinct from, you know, so-called black music genres. But a lot of African influences are part of Latin music, right? So we wouldn't have salsa, we wouldn't have merengue, we wouldn't have bachata, we wouldn't have reggaeton, we wouldn't have a lot of the Latin music genres that are so popular if we didn't have African diasporic populations and cultural practices in Latin America. And so that was really important to me. It seems so basic in many ways to think like, oh, we have to include Puerto Rico in the African diaspora. But for some people, that actually is controversial. To me, that seems ridiculous. To me, it seems like very obvious that Puerto Rico should be part of the African diaspora. But, you know, so that was really important. And it's actually a really interesting time right now for research about blackness and race relations in Puerto Rico. There are several really great books that have just come out or that are coming out that were very influential for me. Zaire Lindsay Flores has a great book about public housing and racial segregation in Puerto Rico. Isar Gudro, who's an anthropologist, wrote an excellent book called Scripts of Blackness about the politics of folklore and blackness in Ponce, Puerto Rico. There's a wonderful scholar and friend of mine, Marisol Lebron, who's coming out with a great book about policing and race and class in Puerto Rico. So there's a lot of people starting to there's a lot of discussion about race in Puerto Rico happening, and it's not. I don't want to give the impression that this never was discussed before, but I think it's a really great time right now for people who are interested in those kind of topics. There's a lot of really great scholarship coming out. By a lot of really diverse scholars, sociologists, anthropologists, American studies, cultural studies people. So it's a great time to be doing this work, I think.
Right. And you're right there with them, Petra. Don't underestimate yourself. You're right there. You're right there with them. Remix and reggaeton is right there with them. That's awesome. And I'm glad you mentioned some of those titles as well for, you know, folk who are listening that may be interested in exploring some other aspects of, you know, Puerto Rico and, you know, anthropology or other social science aspects, or you know, Puerto Rico, where it fits into, you know, the African diaspora. And so definitely check out some of those authors and some of those titles that Petra mentioned. And if you need to rewind back a little bit, and you can play it again so you can write some of those.
Yeah. And there, a lot of them are in the bibliography. So when you get there, the book, you can go to the Works Cited page and look them up.
Right. But read the book first before you go to the Works Cited page, right? Make sure you go through and read it first. All right. Well, I don't want to take up all day, because I could sit here and talk with you about reggaeton and do that beat all day long, Petra. But I'm not going to do that, because I'm going to let you earn your main check, which is being an outstanding professor there at Wellesley College. But thank you so much for, you know, taking some time with us today. You know, the audience, I'm certainly, you know, appreciates it. And, you know, this is great. You know, there are probably some people listening that don't know much about reggaeton, and they may be interested in going to check it out now. And would you be okay if people want to email you or contact you if they want to?
Sure. I'm always happy to hear from people about what they think about the book. I'm also, like, always very happy to get new songs from people. People often send me things, you know, have you heard about this artist? Because I think it is very analogous to hip-hop. So there are still, like, new artists who come out, you know, sort of underground, or, you know, they're on YouTube or whatever, and then they kind of blow up, right? This is a story that I'm hearing a lot in pop music. So I get a lot of suggestions from people. I'm very happy to hear from other people about what they think.
Absolutely. And
any sort of leads they have for me. I'm always really interested in hearing new stuff.
So if you're a reggaeton artist out there and you've got a hot track,
I really want to hear it.
Send it to Petra. Or maybe if they want to be interviewed, right? You know, or maybe they have some connection. Definitely as an artist. You know,
yeah, I mean, that's also something I'm really interested in. I had a little side project that I published a few papers on, a group called Los Racas, who are a Panamanian rap group from the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And one of the pieces that I published is like a transcript of an interview I did with them. And so that's something else I'm really committed to as a scholar is, you know, I think that a lot of scholars, we have this reputation of being very detached from what we do, from what we study. But I think I've always been motivated by putting out the voices and experiences of people who have been neglected by scholarship for a long time. And so I'm really proud of that piece with Los Racas. So if you're an artist and you have cool stuff and you want to be interviewed, you should also email me. That'd be awesome.
Right.
See what we can do together.
Wellesley College, right?
Yes.
Petra Rivera Rideau. Look her up, and definitely send her your hot track. She can't get you on MTV or anything, but
I can't do that. But
you can make it into one of her publications, right?
Into an academic journal. We'll see.
Absolutely. And Petra, before we go, that brings up a good point. Would you like to share with the audience any of your other current projects or future projects or things that you have in the pipeline?
Yeah, I actually am working on a project that I think of as remixing reggaeton volume 2, actually, that is related to what I said earlier about the kind of infiltration of reggaeton into pop, both Latin pop and U.S. mainstream pop. I've been really thinking about what people call Latin urban music now.
Okay.
So reggaeton has been considered an urban genre, and urban is complicated, but it's analogous to what we might think of, like, urban as hip-hop and R&B, right? Tied to Black urban communities, Latin urban, I argue, functions in a similar way and incorporates reggaeton and also bachata, which is a Dominican guitar-based love song. So I'm really thinking about the racial politics of Latin urban music, and I've been writing about a lot of different artists and kind of what happens to the mainstream. What are the racial politics of the mainstreaming of reggaeton? So, for example, one person I've been talking a lot about lately is Enrique Iglesias.
Okay.
Some people may remember from, like, Bailamos in 1999, right? But he, you know, he has a long career since 1995 of singing dance pop tracks. And then in 2014, some people may have heard this song Bailando that he did. Actually recorded 4 versions of Bailando: Spanish, English, Brazilian Portuguese, and continental Portuguese. It was a huge hit for him. And a lot of his subsequent hits have been basically reggaeton songs, you know, in terms of the beat. And so I've been writing about him and the sort of politics of whiteness around reggaeton and Enrique Iglesias's, you know, rebirth as a reggaeton artist in his 40s, right? And then also groups like Gente de Zona, people may know. This is another really interesting thing, the Gente de Zona, the Afro-Cuban. They were one of the most popular reggaeton groups in Cuba.
Okay.
And now they are in the United States. But they're interesting because they retain their, you know, Cuban citizenship and their U.S. residency. So they live in Miami, but they're also still attached to Cuba. They're not, you know, Cuban exiles who left Cuba permanently. And so they have been connected to Enrique Iglesias and also are on Mark Anthony's new record label. So they've sort of become rebranded, I think, as these tropical salsa kind of artists as opposed to reggaeton artists. So they're an example in my new project of thinking about how Black Latino artists, right, what are the, how has the mainstreaming of this Latin urban music affected their performance possibilities? So those are the kinds of things I'm thinking about in my new project. And then I'm also doing an ethnographic, like very, it's very slow going, but I'm in the midst of, you know, talking to people about Zumba. So one of the things from this project is, you know, as a graduate student, I was quite stressed out. And so the main way I dealt with my stress was to exercise, and which is something I do not enjoy, but I really like realized that I like Zumba because they play reggaeton in Zumba all the time, or at least they did when I was taking it in Berkeley. And so I've taken Zumba classes all over the country, everywhere I've lived, right? California, New York, Appalachia, because I was at Virginia Tech before Wellesley, now the Boston area. And every class is very different, and people have very different ideas about Latin music, depending on what class you're in. So, you know, when I was in Blacksburg, Virginia, which is a small college town in the middle of Appalachia, I was in a class that was a lot of women from Latin America who were engineers or biologists or chemists, because Virginia Tech is a STEM school. They were in Appalachia to work at Tech, and they were in Zumba to like be with each other and listen to Spanish music and get some exercise, right? And then I've been to classes like here, Wellesley is a suburb of Boston. I've been to classes, you know, in this area at some very fancy, you know, elite, not, well, I don't want to say elite, but like very expensive studios where a class will cost $15, for example, for a 1 hour class, where, so there's a predominantly, you know, white American group of women. It's almost always women who are doing Zumba, who have a whole other kind of idea about Latin music and sexuality and stuff like that that are informing their ideas about the class. So I'm working on that. I'm just going to Zumba classes and talking to people about Zumba. So if you have strong feelings about Zumba or you know of a cool class, I've also, people have also started sending me like recommendations for Zumba classes. So I've heard about like a ratchet Zumba class that happens in New York. I've never been to it, but I'm interested. And heard of like different kind of public health programs targeting Latina women that use Zumba to, as like diabetes prevention and stuff like that. So if you know of any cool Zumba programs, I'm also happy to hear from you. So I could check those out. Those are the two things that I'm working on right now. And I'm pretty excited about them. We'll see what happens, but I think they're going to be good. And I'm really excited about the, like I said before, you know, there's just so much to do. One of the things I learned from this project is how many gaps there are and how much work there is to do. And I try to, you know, motivate my students to go out and do this research. And I hope that some people listening might be interested in going out and writing things. Or,
absolutely.
Because, I mean, there's just so much. And it's just a million possibilities. So those are the two I'm attached to right now. But we'll see what else happens.
Well, that sounds pretty good, and hopefully you'll get some contacts on that Zumba. I think there are many people.
Zumba classes, send them to me. I love them. Yeah. Zumba also, if people are interested, you know, they have a cruise that you can go to. If you're an instructor, they have a convention. They have all kinds of stuff. So they have a magazine. So there's all kinds of ways that you can be inserted into the Zumba world. Yes.
Well, I can't wait to see what the title of your Zumba book is going to be.
Me either. It's going to be cool. Fluorescent. It's going to have a lot of fluorescent colors.
Oh, yes. And so I want to get a commitment from you right now for that Zumba book. I want you right back here on the African American.
I'll work on it. Yeah.
African American Studies Channel. Well, Petra, it was great fun talking with you, and I could talk with you all day, but I know you got to get to work, as do I. But thank you so much for your time, and we're talking about your upcoming Zumba project, but we're here mainly talking with you today about remixing reggaeton, the cultural politics of race in Puerto Rico, published by Duke University Press. And so we're going to close it out here with Petra Rivera Rideau. She is an assistant professor at Wellesley College in American Studies. And thank you again so much. I really enjoyed it. I enjoy reggaeton. One more time before we go. I'm trying to get you. Petra, you're not going to do any lyrics, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I have a lot of skills, but that's not what I'm
But that's not. That's the, apparently Zumba. We'll find out soon.
Yeah.
You'll
we'll
be on the cover with the, of that Zumba book. It's
going
to be you.
DVD, instructional DVD.
So, thank you
so much for having me and for letting the bus. I hope people enjoy it.
I'm sure that they will. And y'all go check out Remixing Reggaeton. Petra did a great job. And again, this is not just a black scholarship book. This is for anybody interested in music history, African diaspora history, Puerto Rican history, whatever the case may be. This is a great book. And as she mentioned earlier, there are not a whole lot of books on that topic and similar topics. So, you know, delve into this, pick it up, and become educated. All right? And so we're going to close out today. And this is James Stansel, your host of the African American Studies Channel on the New Books Network. And Petra, can you tell our audience goodbye?
Bye. Thank you.
She's going to go do some Zumba now, and we'll see you next time on the New Books Network. Have a great day. Peace and love. All right, we're back. This is James Stansel of the African American Studies Channel, the New Books Network. I hope you enjoyed that interview with the author of Remixing Reggaeton, the Cultural Politics of Race in Puerto Rico. And as you heard her say there, she's got future projects in the works. One of them is on Zumba. So if you have any Zumba information, Zumba classes, or you want to know more about Zumba or talk with her, maybe you could potentially be in her book. Contact her up there at Wellesley. As well as you guys who and ladies who are interested in reggaeton. If you got some new music or if you're a reggaeton artist, get in contact with her that way as well. And everybody, check out her book. This is a really good book. It's an interesting book. And you know, it was a bit of a passion project for her, just like many of us, you know, in the academy. We really pursue those things we're interested in, and she really wanted to make reggaeton an academic topic. So kudos to you there, Petra. You did a great job. So we're going to leave it there, and we're going to see you next time on the New Books Network's African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel. Peace and love.